to your daily dose of facts to fight off the liberal gaslighting.
You can be in the middle of a hurricane.
You have sanctuary in the city of Chicago.
Or you can be on a calm day. North is still north. You could be in a thunderstorm.
I am angry. We are not going back. Not ever.
North is still north. People can yell at you.
The hell with the Supreme Court. We will defy them.
North is still north. It doesn't change fundamental things. And in this business, right is still right, even if you stand by yourself.
We don't get fooled again. No, no.
Live across the fruited plain and from sea to shining sea, we're converting the Marxist left 1 hour at a time on the Wendy Bell radio program.
Hey!
Hello, America, and beyond the fruited plain. Welcome home to the Wendy Bell Radio program. We are so excited every single day to bring you our common sense conservative values. I think they're very comfortable. They feel like kind of stepping into a warm bubble bath. It just feels good. It feels comfortable. That's what today is going to be. We got a great show for you. We've got our national security expert, John Guandolo. He's got a big alert to share with us. Beyond that, we have Jake Lang, January 6th political hostage, who has just emerged for more than 30 days in solitary confinement. And he is going to tell you, by the way, he's been waiting 3 years for a trial. That is how justice works. When you are a MAGA supporter, a Trump supporter, a proud conservative. He's going to tell you what happens. He's got some insight. I don't think that the justice system wants us to know about. And we're going to have him about halfway in the program. Do not miss a moment. It's a good time to get the app, Wendy Bell Radio Network. Follow the live stream. Our podcast, Wendy Bell Radio, wherever you get your favorite listening material, put us in. Download us onto your device. Take us with you wherever you go. We're just delighted to be with you. Welcome home. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands. One nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Amen. You know, it's very humbling to share the story of my 10th birthday, and I've talked about it peripherally before. And you would think this is odd because it was 44 years ago. How could you remember something so vividly? I remember the smell of the chlorine in the pool as I waited at my mom and dad's house in California, where I grew up, celebrating my 10th birthday, waiting for a handful of friends to show up for my birthday party. I remember the clouds. I remember what my mom had made for lunch. I remember that my dad had gotten a huge bag of just delicious Bing cherries. And I remember not really ever being able to eat another one after that day. I was a lousy kid. I was a liar. And I was a bad liar. I lied about everything. I was a cheat. I was a thief. I remember shoplifting from stores well before I ever got arrested for doing it. I was, at a very young age, not a very good person. I had the ingredients, but for whatever reason, I guess I felt like I had to, I guess, be something I wasn't in order to have people pay attention to me. And they paid attention to me for all the wrong reasons. And that day, nobody showed up to my birthday party. When you're 10 years old and you look in the mirror and you realize the reason why nobody's coming to your house is because you're not a good person, it's a big deal. But I remember locking myself in the bathroom and crying a really, really ugly cry. One of those it takes 24 hours for your face to stop swelling. And I looked in the mirror and I had a very honest conversation with myself, and that was going to be the end. That was it. No more of the nonsense. And it took me years, particularly with my parents and probably my sister, because I was lousy to her too. It took me years to regain their trust. Isn't it so weird how you can lose in an instant what takes sometimes a lifetime to achieve? Trust. But I never looked back. And through the course of my life, I've made very pointed decisions because of that birthday. And because of that, I can't be bribed, I can't be bought, I can't be bullied. But I can taste it like it was yesterday. I was lucky. I was just a kid. I did dabble in other things. Got arrested when I was 16. That was a slap in the face. And that was the day I officially lost my parents' trust. To say that I've spent the last 30-odd years trying to prove to them that I'm actually not such a loser would be an understatement. But it shapes who you are. Shapes how you grow up, the decisions you make, the friends you make, the partners you choose, how you teach your children, your experiences. Because our kids watch every single thing we do. So to say I have an aversion to liars is probably not stating it as loudly as I should. I really, really dislike liars. Do we all lie every day? Probably. About little things here and there. I'm not going to tell you I'm as pure as the driven snow now. I'm not. But fundamentally, factually, philosophically, politically, spiritually, I don't lie. A huge lie that we have been told in this country has unraveled, and it's being buried. It's being kind of tucked back in the C section of your local newspaper. You have to scroll through the national websites to find it in the headline, and yet it is perhaps the most damning admission that we live in a country of liars. The biggest example of it today. And it's this whole idea now that, yes, indeed, we do know that the NIH, Dr. Fauci's NIAID, did in fact use our taxpayer money to fund research with the bat lady at the Wuhan Institute of Virology that ended up getting out and killing millions of people. Now, you knew that. I knew that. We've known that for years. We have been demonized. We've been doxxed. Many of us have been fired. We've been canceled. We've been criticized. We've been mocked. But we've never been wrong, which is the curious part of all of this. And we're going to talk to you about this. Yeah, about that virus. Well, maybe we didn't tell you that that's unacceptable. And just before we went on the air, as I'm flashing back to the epiphany I had as a fifth grader about the consequences of living a lousy life, about being less than God made you to be, I want to tell you a few things about what they lied to us about regarding just that one little slice of crazy that shut down our country, that killed thousands of our greatest generation in nursing homes by themselves, that rocked a generation of school kids, that forced the shutdown of how many small businesses, and peeled back the curtain to the corruption that we had been asleep to, They lied to us about where that stupid virus came from. They lied about how it was created, who paid for it. They lied about how dangerous it was. They lied to get that emergency use authorization to get rich off of the vaccine. And to do that, they had to lie about hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. They had to lie about the masks. Now they're saying, you know, that 6-foot social distancing thing. Yeah, that really was nothing either. We just kind of made that up. Yeah, they lied about that. They lied about kids being vectors of disease. They lied about the number of deaths. They lied on death certificates. They lied about the effectiveness of those stupid tests. They lied about testing the vaccine at all. They lied about testing it for pregnant women when actually they really tested it on 44 pregnant rats, the lion's share of which died. They lied about people dying suddenly, about the side effects, about turbo cancers, about outrageous miscarriage rates. They lied about shutting down the entire country. They lied about filling skate parks with sand and taking off swings from the swing sets and the nets from the basketball hoops. That was going to keep our kids safe. They lied about it being safe and effective. And they had the FDA lie about needing 50 years to finally come clean and tell the truth. Look, I was 10. These are grown-ups whose collateral damage is in the millions. And remember, you're not supposed to talk about it. We will. Because if you like the truth, you found the right place. I do too. We'll be right back, right here on the Wendy Bell Radio Network. All right, so we got a lot to talk about in the hours ahead. We're going to talk about House Republicans agreeing it's time to hold Merrick Garland in contempt of Congress for defying a congressional subpoena to hand over the Robert Hur tapes, the audio recording of Joe Biden. Obviously not portraying a vigorous and strong and mentally capable commander-in-chief. We're going to talk about that. But I love at the bottom of this first segment to fly by something that we've shared with you from several weeks ago. And this is an interesting story out of Breitbart. These polls give us a gauge, a snapshot of just, I think, American opinion. Doesn't mean this is how people are going to vote, this is what's going to happen, but I think it's a very interesting brush with where people are on the spectrum of crazy. Are you easily convinced by the mainstream media? And a lot of people are. And it's been masterful at propagandizing people who really, for whatever reason, have never done their own research. So it's easy to fall into that trap. But there is a growing number of people who are spending the time, and they're digging for answers, and they're asking the questions, and they're seeing the suck, and they're tired of it. And this poll is one of those examples, right? So Breitbart.com poll says taxpayers are turning on funding NPR, right? National Public Radio, we pay for it. More and more people are saying, why are we paying for what is clearly institutionalized government propaganda? Why are we funding this? This is very intriguing. Here's your story. Taxpayers are turning on the public funding of National Public Radio, according to the latest DailyMail.com tip survey. So this is what the respondents were asked. Do you agree or disagree? NPR should lose taxpayer funding due to its political bias. Across the board, 44% agree that NPR should lose its funding, compared to 26% who disagree. Another 31% remain unsure. That 31% is that very malleable, reachable group like my friend, who clearly is more liberal-leaning than she is conservative. But when we sit down and we talk, she knows what I do, and she says something to me. I don't like when Donald Trump does this or this, or why did that happen? And we talk about it. That's your 31%. Those are the people who haven't started to do their own research yet, but they're open to the idea because they're looking around saying whatever's going on isn't working. So I got to start paying attention. 44%. Stop giving my money to a quote-unquote news outlet or news forum that provides one-sided information. That's winning. Those are the victories we have to look at. I mean, when you can collectively take Anheuser-Busch stock and you can drop it by $1 billion, whatever the number is, you can plummet sales. And I don't wish anybody to lose their job over a company stepping in a giant turd sandwich and putting a dude who thinks he's a chick on their can, even if it was just for publicity's sake. There's a right way to handle that, and then there's the way they handled that. And the way they handled that was to tell you all to pound sand. And then what did everybody do? They walked past those cases of Bud Light in the cooler at the grocery store, and they went for something else. That is winning. Target, during its Pride stuff that's coming up this next month, saying we're only going to put out Pride things in about half of our stores, but the lion's share is going to be online. That is winning. Now, of course, the whole NPR story we followed. The survey comes weeks after that veteran NPR editor and reporter, Yuri Berliner, resigned from NPR after he published an article that blasted the network's left-wing bias, wrote an op-ed published in the Free Press. And he basically said, look, we've got 80-odd editors at NPR. And I started noticing the homogenized version of the news we were presenting. It was all one-sided. And so I did a look at all of the people who were making the editorial decisions at this storied news source. And everybody was a registered Democrat. That's not very diverse. That's not very broad thinking. That's not informative. That's one-sided. And so the people at NPR came out after him. And they tried to distance themselves. And their new freaky CEO, who's a wackadoodle incarnate, who's all about censorship, think about that, came out against him. So he resigned. Screw you. I don't need to work here. Suspended without pay for a week for having the audacity to tell the truth. So that's the story, if you think about it. Little things like this that we have to see. And we have to say, look, I don't listen to NPR. I never really have. I guarantee you I could decide the same way I can decide in the first 30 seconds of 60 Minutes. That it's going to suck. That it's going to present something to me that does not encourage me to think. That does not teach me anything. It doesn't enrich my life. It doesn't move us forward. It doesn't bring us together. People know this, and they're walking away. When we come back, I want to dive into this whole Merrick Garland nonsense. It's so unfortunate that all the boobs in this administration are just low information people, low integrity people, corrupt morons who are dangerous. And the House Republicans have finally had enough. We want to hear the tapes from Joe Biden's sit down with special counsel Robert Hur. The only reason you're not sharing them is because they are damning for Joe Biden. And that dude needs all the help he can get. The vote to hold Merrick Garland in contempt and all of that. Oh, wait. It's coming up next on the Wendy Bell Radio Network. So if you're a transparent individual, you don't do anything that you're seeing done by the Biden administration. You don't hide records. You don't delete video. You don't erase tapes. You don't lie about your email address. You don't carry a phone that's not listed, right? And that all these things go on a daily basis in this White House. All the while, Donald Trump is being bogged down in the works of persecution. So I guess that the House Republicans had enough yesterday, and they have decided it is time to file contempt charges against the Attorney General of the United States, who, thank God, the one valuable thing Mitch McConnell ever did in his tenure in the Senate was to block this cat from becoming a Supreme Court justice. Can you imagine? This man is a boob. He's running interference. They're running cover because House Republicans want the audio recordings that Robert Hur had, he made, during 2 days. It's like 7 hours of recordings, sitting with Joe Biden. You know, the White House came out and they were like, hey, he carved out all this time for you. Like, we take this very seriously. But of course, the official record of what was said was highly redacted. Well, you don't have to redact things if you're being honest, unless it's top secret. And there's really nothing top secret. I think Joe Biden actually knows, other than his criminality and his crime family syndicate's criminality. And that story is getting more lugubrious. We'll tell you about that coming up as well. But I wanted to read this to you. This is this, I'm going to go back to the very beginning of it. It's the official document that Jamie Comer has filed to hold Merrick Garland in contempt for refusing to hand over the recordings of that sit-down interview. And as I scroll forward to page 12 of 17, I just wanted to briefly read to you the reality of what the Republicans are up against in Congress. Right? You get stonewalling, you get slow walking, you get lies under oath, right? You get the media twisting stories, running interference, the White House press people lying about it. And this is exactly what Jamie Comer says is going on in this case. The Attorney General's failure to produce the subpoenaed records warrants contempt. And this is official. This is in the filing to Merrick Garland, holding him in contempt. The committees have articulated the impeachment and legislative purposes for their subpoenas to the Attorney General. Hey, we sent you a subpoena. These are the things that we want. You're the dude who can give them to us. So let's go. You've got the full weight of Congress. We supersede you. Let's go. The department at the Attorney General's direction continues to withhold relevant records that have been subpoenaed, despite the committee's repeated attempts to explain the valid basis for seeking the records, and with no attempt by the department to even cite a constitutional or legal privilege as the basis for doing so. House oversight. Show us those recordings. Let us hear for ourselves the context in which Joe Biden either could or could not answer very important questions, specifically about classified documents, but generally identifying the degree of his mental decay. That is it. In order to prop up a puppet who does not think for himself, can barely speak, has trouble walking, is clearly affected by dementia, this nonsense of not even responding to these congressional subpoenas has got to stop. In the months, 2 months, since the committee's initial requests to the department, and following the release of special counsel's HERS report, the department has produced only five, the DOJ is the department, only five letters from President Biden's White House and personal counsel to the department. One letter from the department to President Biden's White House and personal counsel, redacted transcripts of Special Counsel Hur's two interviews with President Biden, and redacted transcripts of Special Counsel Hur's two interviews with Zwanitzer. That's his ghostwriter, Joe Biden's ghostwriter, to whom he admitted he had found classified documents, boxes and boxes of documents. They weren't locked up. They weren't secure. They were nothing. Donald Trump's were at Mar-a-Lago, under Secret Service protection, under that whole apparatus of security. Joe Biden had him in a freaking wet, damaged box on the floor next to a collapsed dog kennel in his garage. So this is what we're up against. All right? That's the backstory. They've given nothing. We don't even have to respond to you. That is how serious this is. Joe Biden and his administration believe they are above the law. They act as though they are above the law. Everything that they said, we will be the most transparent. We will bring civility and decency back. We know what to do, just can't wait to do it. Well, Joe Biden wants to finish the job. Don't you forget that. Now, while this is going on, and I listen to Merrick Garland. Listen to Merrick Garland try to pretend that this is an unnecessary step, that he is untouchable, the DOJ doesn't have to obey a subpoena from Congress. But listen carefully to his words. He says something very interesting. He says, legitimate. Listen.
The Justice Department is a fundamental institution of our democracy. People depend on us to ensure that our investigations and our prosecutions are conducted according to the facts and the law and without political influence. We have gone to extraordinary lengths to ensure that the committees get responses to their legitimate requests. But this is not one. To the contrary, this is one that would harm our ability in the future to successfully pursue sensitive investigations.
This would harm our ability in the future to go after other political enemies other than Donald Trump. This is not legitimate. They've given 5 pages, ladies and gentlemen. Five pages! We know what they're hiding. Everybody knows what they're hiding. Now, on the backdrop of this and this bombshell news, it's going to get buried in your local newspaper if you even have one anymore. The idea that, yeah, our government did pay for the Wuhan bat lady to create COVID. That's fantastic. With that on the back burner, let's not forget that you've got the singularly most corrupt president in American history, who I believe and I will take great joy in his political reputation being asterisked with disgrace. Disgraced former president, right? New bank accounts have been uncovered in this House oversight investigation. Jamie Comer, head of House oversight, sat down with Maria Bartiromo on Fox. This is yesterday. Talking, and this is a big deal, ladies and gentlemen. Nobody in ABC News, CBS, NBC, CNN, MSNBC, any of the other hack networks will touch this story because it is damning proof of at least $24 million laundered through all of these various bank accounts and shell companies of the Biden crime family syndicate. Here is audio. This is the real story. This is your breaking news. This is the person who should be on trial. This is the man who has committed treason against the United States. Joseph Robinette Biden. Audio soundbite number one.
The number of bank accounts that we've discovered over the past year and a half since I've had subpoena power, since the Republicans flipped the House, is unbelievable. I mean, I don't think you would find very many people that have a billion-dollar net worth that have as many different bank accounts as this Biden family had. Many of these were shell companies, as you and I have discussed, Maria, companies that sole purpose was to launder the money that the Bidens were receiving from China, from Romania, from Russia, and never one time through the course of this entire investigation, even during the depositions with Hunter Biden and the transcribed interview with Jim Biden, were they able to answer exactly what the family did to receive this money. So we believe we found some more accounts that will answer some more questions, and hopefully we can prepare to close this investigation and present our findings to the American people.
So this is important. When's the first debate? Coming up next month, right? House Oversight plans to drop these details, and I would imagine, shortly before that time. And I'm going to predict something. I believe that them setting up a June debate, which is unprecedented. They usually don't start until September, October. June is the earliest presidential debate. Why? Why would Team Biden agree to that? I bet you this information that Comer and Oversight are going to drop comes out right before that debate. He's going to debate and then they're going to kick him out. Joe Biden. They're going to remove him from that. They're going to abandon Joe Biden and turn their back, and they're going to let him sink for all of this stuff that he's been propped up by. Okay? That's number one. Audio soundbite one. Number two, this is very interesting. They know Joe Biden's role. All of the times he said he never had any conversation, all the times he said there was a brick wall, we know nothing, right? It is undeniable, and this is the information that will be presented, hopefully in a primetime broadcast, much like the way of the January 6th committee nonsense, right? This is going to be presented to the American people. Jamie Comer, audio soundbite two.
You know, the evidence is overwhelming that Joe Biden was involved, and as three different Biden associates have testified, Joe Biden was a central figure in the Biden family influence peddling scheme. He knew full well what his family was doing, and some have even suggested that he was the closer, that he would go in when either Jim Biden or Hunter Biden had made their pitch as to why they needed to invest in the Biden brand, that Joe Biden would then appear, shake hands, have a conversation, have dinner, just so the people that were paying the Bidens would know Joe knew exactly what was going on. If you were paying the Biden family for the Biden brand, you were buying Joe Biden, and Joe Biden wanted to make sure all the shady people who sent the shady wire transfers through all the LLCs to the Biden family, they wanted to know that Joe Biden was front and center, and I think that the evidence will prove that.
Every single Democrat knows exactly what is going on. By the way, so do all the Republicans. The scary part? How many Republicans are in on the cover-up? When we come back, this whole Manhattan case, this hush money thing against Donald Trump, it's toast. It's comical. It's comical that we could see a convicted felon and a serial liar get caught in a lie on the stand. Shocking. Not at all. Michael Cohen implodes and the left is freaking. Next on the Wendy Bell Radio Network. It's really embarrassing when you listen to any of the news reports about this hush money case in Manhattan, which is predicated on the allegation that Donald Trump had sex with a porn star. And then was really worried about that information getting out. And so he wrote her a $130,000 check. Kind of a weird number, isn't it? And that then he tried to cover it up. Lied about it. Tried to finagle his bookkeeping. His record keeping. To hide it. Right before the election of 2016. And because of that, he should be... whatever crime he committed, which we still haven't heard the crime, he should be prevented from running for re-election. So we all know the predicate. It is so ridiculous how this story has fallen apart. And you can't rely on serial liars to get you across the finish line. Because it's not how it works. So there's a pivotal moment in this entire case, right? And the pivotal moment is Michael Cohen alleging through text messages and phone records that he made a phone call to Donald Trump to tell Donald Trump about Stormy Daniels. And it was in that phone call that Trump allegedly told him to write a check. Get rid of the woman. Pay her off. Well, the phone records don't indicate that. And in blistering cross-examination yesterday, Donald Trump's legal team eviscerated the serial liar known as Michael Cohen. Severely damaging testimony is what CNN's Anderson Cooper has to say about this. They are going to have to make a very serious decision, all of these news outlets. How long are you going to keep telling everybody that the emperor is wearing clothes? because we can see he's not. And every day that you continue the lie, you lose more and more of your viewers, of your advertisers, of your subscribers. Just ask NPR. This is Anderson Cooper. He says the DOJ's hush money case is officially toast. Now, that's my assessment of it, okay? But this is basically what he says. He's having a conversation with one of their legal analysts, Eli Honig. This guy talking with Anderson Cooper. Do you think Michael Cohen's credibility, see, what happened in this phone call wasn't at all Michael Cohen calling Donald Trump. And we're going to get to that in the next half hour, what was actually going on. Is this damning testimony, is he officially toast on the stand? Is this case now proven to be the joke that we all have known? It is. Listen.
Having just witnessed that piece of cross-examination, do you have doubts that that conversation happened the way Michael Cohen testified on his direct examination? That he called Trump and
I think it's absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's devastating, I mean, for Michael Cohen's credibility on this, I mean, in this one particular topic, whether it's, you know, he just didn't, I mean, it's hard to, I don't know. Yes, I think if I was a juror in this case watching that, I would think this guy's making this up as he's going along, or he's making this particular story up. You know, Todd Blanche was pointing out, you were testifying just on Tuesday in this court, you know, and all morning long, he's been pointing out, you know, inconsistencies in Michael Cohen's testimony, or at least questionable aspects of Michael Cohen's testimony, but nothing that you would necessarily, as a juror, think, okay, that's clearly a lie. Maybe that's just he was misunderstanding, or, you know, he was bragging, or whatever. This one, Todd Blanche clearly saved this to right before the lunch break, I'm assuming, because it was just so well crafted, and just point by point walking through this story, which at first seemed, you know, why this seems like a ridiculous story. Some 14-year-old is sending him, you know, nasty text messages, and he's going to call Keith Schiller about it. And then you realize, you look at he showed the phone logs that the prosecutor had shown, and it's the phone call that Michael Cohen had previously talked about. I think it is severely damaging to Michael Cohen's testimony.
Severely damaging to Michael Cohen's testimony. Now, you heard some names in there, and you're saying to yourself, who are these players? Well, we're going to tell you who everybody is, what happened, how Trump's defense team, right before the break, before the weekend, dropped this testimony on the jury that basically obliterates everything Michael Cohen has said about calling and speaking to Donald Trump and getting the nod, the A-OK, to pay off Stormy Daniels. That's called the implosion of the persecution of Donald Trump. I've got it all for you. Hour number two, next on the Wendy Bell Radio Network.